basically the most pervasive issue for a trans woman being misgendered, or even a trans man. Being misgendered is very, it delegitimizes who you are as an individual. It zaps you of your self-esteem. You know, it takes so much courage to admit to yourself. It took so much courage to admit to myself that I'm a woman, that I don't have to be this boy, this man that other people see me as, that I have to be myself. You know, being a public figure is a means to an end, and that end is further inclusion into society for trans women, right? And so just being another voice in the crowd.
Welcome to another edition of Your True Gender Radio. Your True Gender Radio is podcasting on yourtruegenderpodcast.podomatic.com. We're on Stitcher, we're on iTunes, and yourtruegender.org. Today's episode, we have a very special guest, Mandy Camille Howard. She's a 35-year-old transgender woman, born and raised in Ventura County. She's been a correctional officer since 2009. She came out in 2012 at her work, San Quentin Correctional Facility, which makes her the first openly transgender woman at San Quentin. Welcome, Mandy Camille Howard.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming here to our studios and joining us on Your True Gender Radio. Understand that, of course, you're born and raised in Port Hueneme, California, and mm-hmm. You now live in Sonoma.
Yeah, I live in Sonoma County.
Talk a little about you as you identify in a transgender. You're the first openly out transgender correctional officer at San Quentin Prison. So let's start with that there. How is that going for you?
It's going. I mean, there's always challenges that I'm facing. I came out 3 years ago in 2012 around, I want to say, July. You know, it's been very challenging for me as a transgender woman, as you might imagine, inside San Quentin. I am the first openly trans correctional officer. I am not the first openly trans staff member at San Quentin. We've had nurses and other staff members, just not in the custody side.
Okay. Here you are, a correctional officer, and you've been a correctional officer since about 2007. Did you think about this like a disclosure plan, being transgender? You're thinking, well, I'm going to come out eventually, and you had this kind of idea maybe how mm-hmm. it was going to work. Did that follow suit, or did circumstances say, well, I just have to get out and then just out myself?
I honestly never planned on fully coming out at San Quentin. My initial plan was just to start transitioning in secret and look for employment elsewhere. I did not think transitioning inside the prison would be something that I could do. You know, it didn't seem possible. It seemed like a horrible environment to transition in. It kind of happened almost by accident. I mean, it wasn't a complete accident. I was wearing makeup all the time, and I was starting to do things that people noticed. And then they brought me into an office at one point, and basically I said, you know, I'm transgender. They immediately said, well, cross-dressing is not allowed. So, you know, and I had to explain to them that I was not a cross-dresser, that there is a difference between being cross-dresser and being transgender. That's essentially how it happened, how I came out.
And that was in 2012, you said somewhere in July or so.
Yeah.
It's 2015. How are you feeling about that? Is this a great move for you? I know one time you had mentioned, like, well, I've really done it. I'm out there. Of course, you've been on Huffington Post, and you have some blogs, and you've been interviewed.
Yeah.
And how does that feel to be in the public eye? Do you look forward to being just blending in and in your work?
For me personally, I'm not necessarily an individual who loves being in the limelight, loves being on camera, loves being on the radio even. Even though I speak on the radio right, on a weekly basis, I do it because it's something that I feel that I have to do, not that I want to do. You know, being a public figure is a means to an end, and that end is further inclusion into society for trans women, right? And so just being another voice in the crowd. I'm not looking to be the biggest voice or the most important voice or even the most well-known voice. I'm just looking to be one of them because we need more voices. And I happen to be lucky enough to be in a position that's unique enough that people will go, hey, I wonder what she thinks. I wonder what her opinion is. Not because they think I'm a really important person, but because they feel that where I happen to transition at is an important thing. It's an important deal. It's big, right? And I'm not even the first trans correctional officer in California. I'm not the first one in the country. I'm not the first one in the world. There have been many before me since the 80s and 90s. There have been some. Most of them don't last very long. Most of them haven't lasted as long as I have. There are a few. There's even another trans correctional officer here in California who I can't talk about, but I know her very well as well. It's not easy, no matter where you're at. Here in California, it's not easy. It's definitely not easy in other countries, other states.
What's the not easy part about it? You know, you have prisoners and then you have your co-staff. How's that feeling for you on a daily basis?
Basically, the most pervasive issue for a trans woman being misgendered, or even a trans man, being misgendered is very, it delegitimizes who you are as an individual. It zaps you of your self-esteem. You know, it takes so much courage to admit to yourself. It took so much courage to admit to myself that I am a woman, that I don't have to be this boy, this man that other people see me as, that I have to be myself. And so that takes an awful lot of courage to do that and to come out. So when people sit there and misgender you, they're taking away that power that you took for yourself, and they're doing it little bits at a time. It's not that each individual one hurts a whole lot.
It's like emotional abuse.
It's emotional abuse. And that's the most pervasive issue that happens, right? That's the biggest thing, and that's what I get mostly at work. And for the most part, it's not that people hate me as a transgender person, right? They most probably don't even care whether I'm trans or not, but it's the fact that they're indifferent that allows them to continue to misgender me. In other words, if they cared about you, they would not misgender you. They would make the effort to go ahead and call you she, her, ma'am, miss, whatever. Or if they're not going to gender you, officer, you know, Officer Howard is fine. But these issues are not going away. They continue to happen 3 years on, 3 years later after I've come out already. Continue to get misgendered several dozen times a day, and mostly by the same people. There are probably over a few thousand staff members at San Quentin, around 800 or so correctional officers, and there's a few hundred supervisors and administrators. There's several hundred volunteers and free staff like cooks. There's medical staff. And this is not counting the, at any given time, 3,000 to 4,000 or so inmates that are housed at San Quentin.
I want to know about you and the, mm-hmm. and the celebration that you are. When did you know?
It's a complicated question because when I was little, around the age of 4 or 5, when you're that age, you don't really think of yourself necessarily as being a boy or a girl. You might learn how to express how you feel. You just are. You are who you are, right? I didn't even really notice the differences between me and other girls until probably closer to kindergarten. And the way I looked at it as a child is that I was a girl like any other girl. That, you know, I had my best friend in kindergarten, and she and I were, you know, as thick as thieves. And our families looked at it as, oh, our son is, you know, into the ladies already. Which I don't know why you would think that, because we're 5.
Right.
As a 5-year-old, you're not thinking about that. You might use the language and go, this is my girlfriend, or and she might say, this is my boyfriend, or whatever. You might use the language, but as a 5-year-old, you don't understand the meaning of those, the deeper meaning of those words, right, what they actually mean. But to me, she was just a girl like I was a girl, and it wasn't until I started to get treated differently from her that I figured out that I wasn't a girl. I found out I was a boy. So a lot of people talk about the moment they realized that they were a girl. I more related to realizing the moment that I was a boy.
Very well done. I like that distinction. You mm-hmm. know.
And to me, that was a big distinction. I never had a realization that I was a girl. I just was. I had a realization that I wasn't. Or at the very least, that other people saw me as a boy, treated me as a boy, dressed me as a boy, referred to me as a boy, handed me boy toys instead of girl toys.
Was there a struggle between that? Did you try and find and investigate more why, try and understand why people were calling you a boy and what to do about it?
The one thing that I noticed growing up as a child was that regardless of how I felt or how I tried to express myself, I didn't go to the extreme and insist over and over again that I was a girl to my parents. I did say it a few times, but they would blow you off and, oh, you're just being funny, you're being hilarious. So over time, you start to think that maybe this is how boys become boys. Maybe they start out thinking they're girls, but somebody has to teach them how to be a boy. I didn't know you just felt like a boy. I thought you had to be taught to be one. So I paid attention to the other boys around me. I paid attention to what my father was doing. My father's not a big macho role model. He's a computer programmer. You know, he's a bit of a nerd. I didn't ever get in heavily into sports or anything like that. I did play sports every once in a while. I played baseball and all that, and I did Cub Scouts. And throughout high school, I did wrestling and JROTC military stuff. Started going towards some of the more masculine activities. But for me, it was more like I just thought this is the way other boys felt. I thought this is the way other boys learn to be boys. And, you know, you always say you got to learn to be a man, be a man, be a man. Why are they telling you to be a man? Well, because in your head, you really feel like a girl, so you got to be told to be a man. For me, there is that distinction of not knowing how to be a guy, and I thought that you just had to learn, copy what other guys did and do what they did, and eventually you would feel like a guy. And of course, that never happened. But you don't know that growing up. You don't know that why you're different. You just start to think that maybe this is how everybody feels, and that you got to be like everybody else to fit in. And you start to do those things to fit in.
I really like your thoughtfulness and the clarity you make. And I can see that you are constantly updating how you express yourself. You know, now you're out in the public eye. You're doing a bi-weekly diary. You have a weekly show on Queer Life Radio.
The Queer Life, yeah. Mm-hmm.
How has that influenced the maturity as a transgender, as a woman? Or has it?
Well, I definitely think the attention that I'm getting is evolving how I explain myself. And the reason being is that I'm not wanting to repeat myself completely all the time. I'm wanting to always give each person I interview with something a little different than I gave to the last person. And I'm not making stuff up, but I'm reimagining how to explain stuff to people. As I get better at it, my descriptions become richer and they become more involved. My understanding of myself is growing. You know, I do martial arts, right? I've done martial arts for 20 years. One way to better yourself as a martial artist is to teach it to other people. And the more you teach it to them, you come up with new ways of explaining things that you already understand, you already know, but now I have a new idea of how to get this across to this individual. And the same thing for teaching people about being transgender. Every time I'm on a radio show or do an interview with a reporter, I'm teaching. And every time I teach somebody, I learn something new myself, right? I improve myself as a transgender woman, and I come up with much better ways to explain things than I would have had 2 years ago when I understood a lot less.
What does it take for people to embrace the idea that there's more than just a binary life, that we can identify how we are from inside, even though our expression is different?
I really do think it takes individuals stepping up and coming out of their closets. Even if they're not out educating people directly, just by coming out to somebody, you've educated that person. In other words, when you get to know somebody who's different from you, it's really hard to maintain any type of negative stereotypes you may have had towards an individual of that nature. There's a really famous quote, and I'm not even going to try to quote it because I can't remember it directly, but it essentially says that it's difficult for people to maintain that hatred towards a thing when they start to understand and get to know somebody who is part of that thing, right? You know, in other words, the more you get to know a transgender person, it's really hard to hold on to your stereotypes that you've had prior to that. And those stereotypes melt away. So the more people are exposed to transgender stories, transgender lives, and I'm not even talking about the people who, like me, are on the radio, or like Laverne Cox and now Bruce Jenner, who are out there and telling their stories. I'm not even talking about them, because that's not direct contact. People need direct contact with a transgender person to really get to the point of understanding and acceptance. So it's not even that you need those voices. Those voices are important, right? Because those voices out on the radio, out on TV, allow other transgender individuals who are in the closet to feel safe to come out. And when they come out, that's where you get the direct contact, and that's where the real teaching is done.
What is your experience, or how many direct contacts have you had? And would you say most of it's positive? And I know it's a learning experience for all of us.
Well, especially in my environment, you know, there's, like I said, there's well over 1,000 employees at San Quentin. So I'm definitely getting a lot of direct contact with people, but it's not enough in my situation because I'm not getting a lot of one-on-one direct contact with people. Usually they're just passing you by, right? They see you walk by. They don't really acknowledge you very well. But you got to start engaging people every once in a while. I mean, not every transgender person wants to be an educator. Some transgender individuals just want to live out their lives and not have to explain to everybody why they're doing what they're doing. And that's fine, right? Not everybody needs to do that, but they need to be aware that regardless of whether or not they want to be educating people, just by being out and walking around and talking to people like a normal individual, you're educating. In other words, you're telling people I'm normal. By having a transgender person go out there and live their lives and interact with people on a regular basis, the people that you interact with on a regular basis are going to start to see you as normal. Hmm. They're going to go, wow, you know, like people who knew me beforehand and know me now, they go, wow, you're kind of the same. You know, you look a little happier. You look, your body's shaped a little differently. There are things that are physically different about you, but emotionally and intellectually, I'm the same person that I was before. Now I just get to express myself fully to everybody, and that changes lives. That alters perceptions.
Just to remind everybody, we're talking with Mandy Camille Howard, and she is a transgender individual who's a correctional officer at the Q, the San Quentin Correctional Facility, and she is the first and only openly TG transgender, transsexual correctional officer at that establishment. And we're talking about going on with her life and in general the topics of transgender and how we can be out. I really appreciate you being here. Are you at liberty to talk about your parents, what your dynamics is? Did they know all along, or and do they feel bad that they didn't recognize it earlier? I mean, parents tend to beat themselves up about wanting the best for their kids.
My parents definitely didn't recognize pretty much anything of me growing up when I came out. It was a complete, you know, shotgun across the bow. You know, they didn't have any clue at all. Looking back, retrospectively, I guess, there are signs that they were there. I was always very moody and depressed as a child. There are other signs that they were unaware of, but, you know, those are more minute. However, I just had a conversation recently with my mother, in fact, last night, where we talked about that. We talked about one of the things that disturbed her the most was that she didn't see it and that I did have to suffer for 30 years of my life as a man in silence by myself. And that made her feel like a bad parent, right? That made her feel disconnected from her child. And she felt like she had ignored a big part of me, and she made her feel like a bad parent. And I told her, you know, it doesn't make her a bad parent. And a lot of transgender individuals, they have parents who start to feel that way. They go, oh my gosh, am I a bad parent? And the answer is no, you're not a bad parent. Sometimes it's just not that easy to recognize those signs. Some of us are not as overtly out as children as some other children are, right? Some other children, no matter what you say, I'm a girl, I'm a girl, I'm a girl, I'm a girl, and they'll keep on saying that. That's a bit more overt, right? That's on the surface, whereas a lot of us quickly bury that. And so it's hard to see, even though it's there and it's visible and it is there. It's so hard to see, and you just want the best for your child. And so in my mother's case and my father's case, they're not at fault. They're not to blame. And it touches me really quite a lot to know that they're upset that they didn't do anything sooner.
What's your sense of emotions? Obviously, you're very congruent in who you are. You come out in 2012. Your life is better, right?
It's better and improving. I mean, there's always things that we want to improve in our lives. Not all of them have to do with me being transgender. I'd really love to improve my life by continuing to write and maybe have a second career as a writer someday. That'd be kind of fun for me because that's something I love to do and it's something I'm passionate about and I'm becoming even more passionate about it. I'd love to get my own place someday. Right now I'm just renting a room and there's no shame in that. You know, it saves me a lot of money. So, and I'm happy to be where I'm at right now and I'm super appreciative of having a place to live. Not a lot of people have places to live. I was technically homeless for about 3 months. I did have a place to sleep, but I didn't have a home or a place to go home, right? And this is while I was employed. You know, just things get to the point to where you lose one place and you can't find another one. So you got to do what you can do to survive until you find a new place. my life is steadily improving. I have been incredibly depressed over the last year. I've been, I wouldn't say suicidal, but I've been pretty close, right? I've had those thoughts, those inclinations of just not wanting to continue on. And I don't know if that's suicidal or not, but it's just the, it's almost like giving up. Not that you're going to kill yourself, but it's just saying I'm done. I'm done dealing with people's negativity toward me. I'm done dealing with the curveballs life keeps throwing my way. And after a while, you're like, I just can't deal with it, right? So you start to just kind of fall off that edge. And when you start falling off that edge, eventually it'll probably lead to something a lot worse, right?
So there is a question of how we survive and then how we want to thrive, that are our aspirations for a full, whole life. Let's take a look at some of your resources that you have in life. Mm-hmm. You're identified as transgender, transsexual. You're living a life as a woman. Things are on the up and up. There's still struggles. Let's take an instance, your martial arts. It seems to be maybe a resourceful foundation for you. Is that something you took out of trying to be more manly, or is it, is there... Just wondering what the
I actually did not start doing martial arts as part of a ruse to be a man, right? I did it because when I was in junior high, I was constantly being beat up by some kids who thought I was gay. Why they thought I was gay, I don't know. From my perspective, I didn't believe I portrayed myself as a gay individual, but for whatever reason, they thought I was gay. And not that being gay is bad. You know, obviously, I'm not gay, at least from my perspective, I'm not, right? And I got beat up a lot. And there was a kid who saved my life, or, you know, that's how I tell it. He saved my life. I was getting pounded away, and I'm looking up into the sky, and there's this body flying over me and kicking the guy who was punching me. And this kid had basically done a flying sidekick over my body to hit the guy who was hitting me. And after that moment, I said, you know what? I need to do something to defend myself because these people are not going to stop trying to pick on me. And in reality, they haven't stopped picking on me. After I started learning how to defend myself, they stopped attacking me physically, but that doesn't mean they weren't attacking me emotionally, right? And because that's something that's harder to defend. You can't learn a martial art to defend against verbal abuse. But that's initially why I started to look into doing martial arts, is I was tired of being bullied and physically bullied. And so I didn't have a natural inclination towards fighting or aggressiveness. So I needed to have a way to feel like I could protect myself. And that's why I started to do martial arts.